Monday night. Like, I just like passed right out.
That's awesome.
Oh my god, it felt so good. Like woke up and I wasn't angry.
Like, I'm always
is that normal?
When I wake up, yeah. Like
that will stress me about games.
It's 7 a.m. or it's noon, whenever it is, I should be asleep. I'm not asleep.
Just anger.
Anger.
Anger is your first feeling.
That's yeah.
I'm usually just kind of confused.
I feel like my first feeling is confusion.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of GW Wonkcast, the independent student podcast of the George Washington University's Trachtenberg School of Public Policy and Public Administration. My name is Jessica Blackband. I'm an MPP concentrating in environmental policy, and I'll be moderating this episode. We have two co-hosts with us on the show today, Natalia and Gabe. Natalia, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I am Natalia Abrahams. I am a current first-year student. Getting my MPP, focusing on refugee and immigration resettlement policy.
And I'm Gabe Moss, first year MPP, focusing on urban development and homelessness.
Awesome. And we have a guest today who is also a former cast member, founder of the pod, Nathan Rupp, and he's going to talk with us about regulations and their role in regulating the internet.
Nathan Rupp, yep. Really glad to be back. We're talking about regulating the internet.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Which has been in the news a lot lately.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Are there any developments in regulatory policy kind of in the news lately that made you want to talk about this topic or kind of brought it to mind?
Yeah. So regulation has been something that has been kind of on the back burner in like the American political sphere mm-hmm. since Trump took office, particularly just kind of the general deregulation that's been going on. And then the big push of deregulation when it comes to the internet was the repeal of the net neutrality rules, which is basically just that there was a regulation that says basically that you cannot charge different amounts or have different speeds for different things. So it was basically a rule that created competition, which is usually what people say rules take away, which is just an interesting fact. But then also this whole debacle with Facebook and Facebook data and privacy data is an interesting segue for me into what regulations could be doing on the internet and what they're not doing at present. Mm-hmm. And so basically the question of regulating the internet for me comes down to a basic question of platform power and control. And so basically there's this whole sphere of the internet which is controlled by private firms who have complete control over their sphere of influence, and whether that is going to be through misinformation, whether it's going to be through market power, think of like Amazon, who owns just massive amounts of the actual retail sales, whether it's from the ISPs, the internet service providers, which are conglomerating and congealing into very serious market power, or that's going to be just the companies that are actually all the same company. Think of a Google or Alphabet, for example. So all of this is a manifestation of a deeper problem that our information infrastructure exists outside the normal realm of regulation that controls these issues of market power, information issues, dissemination. And so the problem is that we have private control over a publicly used information infrastructure. And so that there are many layers of this infrastructure. You have the actual information itself, the content, you have the data, mm-hmm. you have the privacy of the data, you can have who can have access to it. We have a big issue lately with Facebook and what was their data even being used for? What did they know about it? Did you even know what your data was being used for? And so basically all this comes down to the fact that private firms have complete undue dominance. And I mean that in a sense of you have no way to push back on this control. The private firm dominates the individual, the consumer, by you have no choice. For example, who knows what their internet provider is? Does anyone, you all know?
Comcast.
Yeah.
If you did not have Comcast, what could you have?
In this area?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
Oh, I have no clue.
It's because you can't have internet. That's only Comcast.
No, it's so true.
No, it
well,
really
no,
is.
I mean, no, like technically literally. In D.C., there's Comcast, there's RCN, I think is the acronym, and there's Verizon. and all three are in talks with the city to renegotiate the contract. So depending on where you live,
yes,
it might be different, and sometimes you might get competition, and there's also smaller ISPs that bundle their services and will sell them. For instance, where I used to live, I could choose between Xfinity, which is Comcast, or a smaller company that just took Xfinity services, bundled them together with some other stuff, and sold them to me. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is what I'm talking about. This is concentration of market power. You don't have, the consumer doesn't really have the ability to either negotiate or even have power over the purchase.
I mean, saying it like that, there's a little, I mean, it is a utility in the same sense that water is a utility, right? It's impractical to have multiple ISPs competing over the same users because ultimately it's a fiber optic cable running to a hub, which runs coax cables into a home. So you could have 16 different coax cables running into your home, but then you need 16 different fiber optic bundles bringing information to those coax cables. And if everyone's choosing between those 16 different companies attached to the end of each cable, it probably wouldn't be very efficient, right? So, I mean, like, is the, I guess I'm just wondering, like, what the alternative would be, just maybe not giving ultimate control to these companies to decide prices. That's a great, great wonder.
You know, paying something for Wi-Fi is, I don't know. I'm wondering if, like, there's this conglomeration of being only having access to maybe, like, one or maybe two companies is because a lot of people probably don't use cable anymore. Like, I know for me and majority of my friends, like, we just have Wi-Fi. But like, there's no need for anything else. Like, you know,
it's more efficient to have it that way, right? Because, like, for the Comcast or the CenturyLink or whoever, right, their service is based on how many people they can disseminate information to in the most efficient way possible, and that is achieved through being the only force in the market.
And it's that power of the information dissemination that I think is an essential part of it, though, because you are completely reliant on that information, on that flow, which means that you are completely, the individual is completely at the whim and the mercy of the private company,
which
has no regulation.
But I think you can both be right. Like, you can have the situation where there's just natural monopoly, right? But also have these serious problems.
Well, for sure. I'm just saying, like I don't see the natural monopoly as necessarily in itself, like, a problem as long as there's regulation. And I think what we might
get
back
to
is where you started off
Okay.
Ajit Pai taking away the FCC's control over the information.
I agree. That's not the world's biggest problem.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, though, if not if, but, like, net neutrality causing different websites to charge to have access to them would in some way, like, lower the price of Wi-Fi from companies and stuff, because I have, like, which I feel like a lot of phone plans do now have, I have unlimited data. And a lot of phones, especially smartphones, have hotspots. So I can connect my phone to my computer and, like, my tablet. So I'm, like, wondering in a weird way if it will bring prices down.
So let's say you have Verizon. I don't know if you have Verizon or AT&T.
My roommate takes care of all this.
Let's say you have Verizon.
Wi-Fi. We have.
Right. Let's say you have Verizon, and Verizon has partnered with Xfinity, Comcast. Now, Verizon owns media platforms, and Xfinity Comcast owns media platforms. Verizon owns your cell phone, and it owns the network. Xfinity owns the ISP that will connect to the cell tower. So what Verizon and Xfinity can do is they can take all your data and send it through their servers to their data hub, which goes onto their network to access their content like HBO. So at every step in the process, from your Verizon smartphone to the Xfinity-owned content, that partnership owns every bit of capital that you're putting into that system. So while, yes, the price might nominally get lower, you're actually contributing more to a monopoly power, right? Because whether or not they're saying, oh, you get unlimited data, oh, you get free Wi-Fi with your cable bundle, it doesn't really matter. The point is they want to control every stage of the process. They don't really care what they charge you at any individual stage. They're concerned with complete, total, vertical integration of content from producer to consumer.
You made the world sound so scary.
Yeah, and Disney, with buying Fox,
yeah,
is making another step towards having an information network. I'm sorry if I'm...
No, you're doing great.
You know, what Disney wants to do ultimately, right, like, they have the content. They're a huge content creator, one of the only content creators in media right now. if they can own a distribution network, like if they can buy a CenturyLink or a Comcast or make their own, then they can have all their channels only available through that network, only to that network's cell phones, if they partner with Xfinity, or sorry, with Verizon or T-Mobile or AT&T, whoever, or just buy one of them outright in a bizarre alternate reality where they're 30 years ahead of us. Right, if all that goes to plan, then you're using every step of the process, Disney technology, watching Disney content on Disney servers with a Disney phone.
Why does that make me so uncomfortable?
I'm right. Because well,
like, it should.
Oh my gosh, it's iRobot all over again.
That is, that's the like boogeyman for internet liberals is like, this is really, really bad. We shouldn't do this. Mm-hmm. We should regulate this. Because if you allow for this sort of total vertical integration by allowing Comcast to set prices and gate content for other producers, what you're essentially doing is giving carte blanche access for Comcast to gate all of the content and only allow its content at reasonable cost.
And then if you take a step back and think of the content just as like a flow of information, if you think back to the initial creation, let's say, of electricity, right? It provided for a whole host of economic activities that became then absolutely necessary that we could not live without. They also create a whole host of downstream economic effects. And so the people who could turn on and off the lights basically then have the power to control both the economic activity that becomes necessarily driven and supported by the good or service, here being the internet, and also all the downstream effects. So if you think of the internet, you could have Google, who is just maybe one provider or, you know, is one searching mechanism for information, but there's also all the downstream effects that come from Google doing what it does. And so by Google having the power to oversee what they're doing without any oversight, there's also all the whole host of downstream effects. So think of like search engines, all the algorithms that are based in there, all of the implicit issues as well as explicit issues that come with Googling searches. I'm pretty sure you all may have been familiar with when someone in Google had tagged black people on gorillas. Uh-huh. And so like that clearly means they're in controlling of both the information and how the information is then being provided. And so it becomes a necessary good that we're reliant on for a for-profit company to just at their whim.
So maybe this sounds naive, but can you give me like just a few examples of worst case scenario, what that kind of integration means for consumers potentially? Or for people,
perfect monopoly.
Yeah, I think
so. Which I think is pretty clear.
No, but like, what does that mean for me as an individual person
who's got no choice?
So imagine like a Netflix or Hulu, right? So if you have Netflix creates its own content, right? Mm-hmm. That Hulu can't have.
Okay.
Right. Hulu creates its own content that Netflix can't have. Now imagine this goes one step further, where only Netflix will run on Comcast. So if you want to watch Netflix, you need to buy Comcast.
Okay.
Because maybe Comcast owns Netflix. But maybe then there's also, if you want to extrapolate even further, you have to have a certain, Mac is now also bought by the same company, which means in order to watch, Netflix, you have to have a Mac computer on Comcast to watch Netflix, which also means you can't have any access to other stuff because the other companies have then decided to silo off their content. Mm-hmm. So there's this perfect stream of content. You own the flow as well as the pipes, right?
Right.
And so that would be like the ultimate worst situation,
ultimate worst.
How could it get worse than that?
That's like
if
horrible.
If they partner with a company like Facebook or Google to make profiles of individual users, which can then be used to set arbitrary price points.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is how it gets to the worst. Now, what we're still talking about is a system that will only ultimately charge you exactly what you'd be able to pay for everything. Mm-hmm. But that means you'll literally never get a deal.
Why is that the case?
Because they're never going to... Because you don't want to charge us something so outrageous that people are just not going to... For me, listen, man, I can go without Facebook, but I do like my Instagram. But it's the same company, so it's like hard to, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like they've taken over my world.
But likely because those companies are disparate and competing with one another, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the weird search engine stuff that's possible is bizarrely arcane due to machine learning, right? So like if you look at YouTube's content filtering system, right? The majority of that is handled by an AI, right? 4 years of YouTube content are uploaded every day to YouTube servers. It's impossible for YouTube to employ enough people to do that. There's not enough people in the world to employ enough people to filter that content. Mm-hmm. So they use an algorithm that's built on machine learning. You feed it different cues, and you hope that it understands what those cues mean and are able to filter out content.
So,
No one knows how YouTube decides what is appropriate content and what is not. Why one black female rapper's video might get tagged because she's wearing pasties, and the male black rapper might not get tagged because he is dancing around with sexy nude women. And that's stereotypically okay for him, but not stereotypically okay for her. So community people won't flag it. YouTube won't flag it. So there's all sorts of weird stuff.
But I don't know. I feel like it can't get to, I say this in my mind because I live in this fake world, that it can't get to a point where like websites are going to be charging us, because I feel at the end of the day, there's just like things that I feel like we're just not going to pay for. Or it's like, if you're an organization, you may pay to have a Facebook page, but that's kind of where that, you know what I mean?
It'll be bundled, right? So you can look at other countries, like I believe New Zealand has this sort of gating going on. So basically, you'll buy the Xfinity bundle, which will include free access to Facebook, as much YouTube streams as you want, unlimited Netflix, 50% access to Hulu, right? So with that, you pay a total block rate for the month for all those services. Anything outside, you pay a higher rate per megabyte streamed, and then the company will divvy up the funds to the individual partners.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if we can all agree that sounds terrible,
yeah.
Can you walk me through when you say like we have to regulate this system? What does that look like? What has been proposed? Do we know that it works?
So that's a great question. So I guess brings back to the initial point of what regulations are for.
Yeah.
Initially, during what we had was a progressive era of regulations. What happened was basically the government decided it needed to pull power out of the hands of these state-like actors, which were private firms who had undue power over, you know, all sorts of activities. Again, think of like telephones and all those types of monopoly powers. So if you think of that was the point of regulation, was to kind of pull back this power because these firms can easily exploit any activity. So then if we start seeing it, if that's the point of regulation, then we need to think of what is it that we want the internet to do? Like, what is the point of the internet? And so I just marked out a few things myself that I thought was important.
You mean besides cat videos, right?
Besides cat videos. Cat memes particularly, the video I could actually kind of do without. So there are a few things I think we all generally agree with when it comes to the internet, is we want to ensure equity of access, right? That everyone can get to it. Maybe not. That's just me personally. We also want to ensure, and then come to a level, some sort of level of protection. Make sure that the content and quality is still quote unquote good, non-corrupted. Because if you think of, let's think of our Facebook feeds now. We have this whole issue with misinformation being sent out to us. So we have this infrastructure of information that is not being used, one, at all for the public good in this case, but also used in a way that is potentially damaging to the infrastructure itself. So we want to have some sort of qualitative protection for, you know, protecting the good, whether this is going to be privacy, what that would mean, again, why that's going to be what the right to be forgotten, whether that's going to be something along the lines of right now all information on all data on like Facebook can be scraped and can be sold and can be used. Privacy rules could say only certain sets of data can even be taken off the internet or even put on the internet. And so that would be a way to regulate, let's say, private data, as well as some sort of consumer protections. Right, because you also don't want to be sold a bill of goods of things you're not actually going to get. So these are, to me, like the basic outlines of what a regulated internet would look like. I am not going to say that I have the answers of what the regulated internet should look like. Just that, to me, that these are the key criteria that is equal and equitable access. So not paying more to get more. Maybe you could have some, like, I really view the internet as a public good. More people use the internet is not going to stop from working. So, like, I really do view it as a public good. Also, I really do think it should be seen as a public utility in this case. It was at least the information the infrastructure for the information, whether the way the content is provided, the ISP, slightly different, but the internet itself needs to be viewed as a public utility, because it's not so much that the internet or is this infrastructure that is a real infrastructure. The internet is a socially constructed infrastructure that is entirely built around power dynamics. And those power dynamics need to be put into place so that there's equal access as well as consumer protection in place. So that's, to me, is like the envisionment.
I'm also thinking about, in if we deregulate the internet, how many other facets this plays into, because I think about my sister who is still in high school, and even when she was in middle school, she was like given a computer. And I think about my mom who's a teacher, and she's like gives out her students computer, like, you know, gives them computer like work at home when she was teaching older grades. And if these kids are expected to do research, because that's so incorporated now, and computer use is so incorporated starting from like middle school up, it's like what if the family can't afford to have access to Google, so all they have is access to like Bing?
Yeah,
or
right.
Something. You know what I mean? Or like they're still on Ask Jeeves, because Ask Jeeves is still like real cheap. Like, you know what
I'm
saying?
Is it still around?
It is.
That's a reality that people live with just currently based on not being able to pay current ISP fees. But
yeah.
But I will say that the ISP protections that were removed are new.
Mm-hmm.
They were not around since the 1980s.
They were, it's true.
They're around since the 2010s. So we're not talking about a huge era of regulation being removed. This is new regulation that is now being taken away. But it was put in place for a reason, because this sort of practice was developing.
What, in before 2010?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
there were cell phones that you could, like, one of the key examples of this was that certain cell phones would have unlimited data only for certain activities, right?
Yeah.
Or faster data for certain things would slow down your internet if you're going to be using it for streaming something that they have decided they don't want to support as much because it takes a lot of bandwidth, a lot of power to support that. So they had, you know, create a contract with Netflix, for example. And then you could stream that without it being an issue. However, if you want to, you know, Hulu or YouTube, it would slow your data down.
Right.
Yeah. So this, I mean, it has ended, it is done, but it is not the end of the world yet that it has ended. Where I see, I mean, so there's hope in stuff like decentralized ISP service stuff. So, right, like, using something like Tor to encrypt your IP address and just to hide your content works for a lot of searches and a lot of streaming content, that sort of thing. Doesn't work for social media. For social media, you inherently need policing of the company, which means giving access to that data, at least in part, to the government. Or ensuring that there is no way that the Facebook employees can mine the data. So that means encrypting all the data to the point where Facebook employees cannot use it, which would probably render their service functionally unable to grow, right? Because they wouldn't be able to actually innovate upon their service, provide better quality data filtering content, right? Because you want to see people that you're going to be friends with. You don't want to see Bob the neo-Nazi popping up on your friends list all the time because I don't like Bob and I don't want to be
with Bob. People were already, you know, angered by the fact that, like, Instagram was trying to recommend people that you should follow or, like, have... Like, I was like, why are these people... I don't know you. Like, I don't want to... Like, I would follow you if I want to follow you. And I have noticed, I think that because there was such a huge backlash, that I have noticed at least that, like, that doesn't really happen on my Instagram anymore. So, and it was happening for, like, 2-3 weeks and then... doesn't happen.
But I mean,
anymore.
If you have, you know, one company that controls all of that stuff, you don't have those kinds of changes when people object.
But
because
they
100%. I'm just saying that, like,
I will say they've shifted it. So if you look on the searches tab, that I sometimes have fun just like clicking on a couple of them and seeing how quickly it changes. It is almost as fast as YouTube to completely remap your whole recommended section.
I don't like looking up a dress on Amazon that all of a sudden it pops up on my... I was like, I know you're watching me, but like, don't be obvious about it. Like, you know what I mean? Wait
so,
a day.
So that sort of stuff you can block with something like Tor. The problem with using Tor is because no one else uses Tor, you look like a criminal, right?
It is not legal
for the FBI to arrest you solely for that, but it is very much legal under the Patriot Act for them to build a case against you with that information and to use that to indict you. And if you happen to be someone of Latin American descent, then they can give that information to ICE, and then we get into that whole...
So real quick, what has passed? Like, I don't know what's passed right now. like, you laws mean, and right, like, the deregulation.
Yeah, what's the current state?
Yeah, I don't know. I, like, know, but I don't know.
So to me, one of the, beyond net neutrality, one of the biggest things that has happened recently was a change to the Communication Decency Act, which is was passed in 96. It's not a big thing. But initially, what it was set up for was, the way it was founded was, there was a senator, last name was Cox, forget his first name, and he read this report of a, some blogger wrote on a, you know, a blog post about how some Wall Street firm was cheating. And then the Wall Street firm, which actually later found out, you know, which the movie Wolf of Wall Street was baked on. So obviously later on we found out this was all corrupt. But the point was they tried to sue this guy for defamation. However, it's anonymous, it's the internet. So
they tried to sue the blogger?
Yeah, but of course they didn't know who he was. And so what they ended up doing was suing the blog itself. They ended up suing, you know, the message board.
Oh, like a WordPress.
Exactly.
Okay.
They end up selling suing WordPress. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, what happened was the bank won. And so what happened was they ended up passing this law called the Communications Decency Act. In section 203, which I have right here.
Excellent.
Thank you. It does something very important. So what it does is it provides that ISPs cannot be treated as speakers or publishers of information provided by content providers. So what this means is that they are not responsible for what's on their on the platform.
I kind of like that though, because that means that you can't sue them for the content of the company working underneath them.
Yes.
Now, if that company happens to be, say, r/Stormfront, well, actually r/Stormfront is making fun of the actual Stormfront, who are a group of internet neo-Nazis. r/Stormfront tells you about the weather. So right, they can't, you can't sue to get information on Stormfront.
So that's great.
You've got to rely on anonymous to get that.
Yes, however, now think of this way. So there is a website, you all may be familiar with, the one called Craigslist, right? Have you all ever been on the personals?
Yes.
No.
There's something else.
Yeah. So the personals on Craigslist, which are actually gone now.
Yeah.
Because of this new rule.
Whoa. Yep.
So for example, happens a lot on the Craigslist personals.
Like the Craigslist killer type?
No, it's sex trafficking.
Yeah.
True.
Yes. And
it's
get into it.
It's like honestly not concealed.
Yes.
And what this did was section 230 of the CDA, which what it did was it said that unless you are actively participating in the curation of your content, then you can be sued if you do that, right? Because then you're actually acting as a publisher.
Oh.
You're actually a newspaper, for example, who is actively participating in the content, right? And so if you are willfully aware of the fact that, for example, fresh, new to town, whatever, means that it's a young girl who's sold into sex trafficking, which, you know, I got the company website.
Young female seeking.
Like Craigslist actively was aware of and created a space for sex trafficking.
Right.
And so what happened was there's this new rule which basically edits this out and says that by being even passively aware or creating a platform by which this type of activity is acceptable, you can then also be liable.
Okay, so
can't we argue that for all platforms? Like, if you create a code, like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, on Twitter, it could be like, hey, I'm new, follow me. And then it's like, it's low-key, like, a sex trafficker who, like, posts.
But this was
different.
This was like, this is they also created the network in order to find.
Oh, I mean, 100%. But, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, can't all technically.
How does this work with encryption? Because YouTube, for instance, uses a 11-digit long hexadecimal encryption code for its videos specifically for this reason, so that there's no way YouTube knows what the contents of its videos are. There is literally not enough time in the universe to hack that code backwards.
You have permissions on?
Well, hang on a second.
So the way YouTube works is it's just a huge database that randomly assigns a encryption code to a video when it's uploaded. And then it relies on the community, the moderators, and the algorithm to filter out bad content by looking at each video. But it can't actually tag videos, and it doesn't know where those videos are sitting in its database. The YouTube URL that you get is literally the encrypted source of that YouTube video, which is why it's basically impossible to find a hidden YouTube video, which is just you've told it not to show up in the search windows or in the recommended for you section. Because unless you have that 11-digit hexadecimal code, you're never going to find it. So they designed it that way, in part because it allows them a lot of space, there's just a huge amount of content, and in part because they could get around this code. So I'm wondering now, if this is gone, does that mean that YouTube, even though it doesn't actively know where each of its videos are and what their content is at any one given moment, does it mean that they're still liable if someone posts a video depicting illegal content?
So maybe not, but we also already see places like YouTube, for example, already banning certain types of video. Mm-hmm. We know, like, when they stopped allowing people how to show, what was it, installations of like bump stocks and silencers to guns, you can't upload those anymore. So people now put them on Pornhub, which is really weird. Oh. That the place that you learn to install your gun is also the place where you watch porn. Mm-hmm. Very
which,
male,
know,
very masculine. There's a lot of issues with toxic masculinity right now. So.
Just if I can go to one,
right?
Like Walmart,
one
like
stop
I
shop.
I need
right?
a one stop shop. So
and anyway, problematic.
So my okay,
but, yes.
but my question is, YouTube already don't think have to know their content because for some videos you have to like sign in. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
because
so,
this may like you can't be under 18. So
for
like you have to
content.
For flag. Yeah, that's what I'm
but
saying.
But people in the community flag. Content,
so there's
right?
there's
not
gates
the
on all the on all their videos, right? Like it's like any other server system, right? There's a cache of information and a server that has all of the information. And in the cache, it's like the usual stuff, like your homepage and that sort of thing. And then there's you, and you just send a request to YouTube saying, "Hey, can I get some information?" YouTube goes through a service, it checks your credentials, which are usually encrypted. I mean, it's YouTube, so they're always going to be encrypted. And then it runs that against its database of users, goes, oh, this person is too young to look at this video. Sorry, can't look at the video. Or,
okay,
oh,
but
this
how does it know if it doesn't know the content?
Because it has a database of all that encrypted information. It knows your encrypted key and your data on that encrypted key, but there's no way for it to say who that encrypted key is because it doesn't know how to walk back the encryption. You have the other half of the key. It's basically like a lockbox where you have the key that can open the box and YouTube has the key that can close the box, and you send the box with your information to YouTube.
But what I'm saying is, like, I cannot be logged into my Google account and like view all kinds of videos, but
yeah.
Say there's like videos apparently I can't view because I'm not signed in, and so it has to make sure. So how does it know? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
because
how does it? Because if it's not supposed to know the content of its videos, shouldn't I be able to watch all videos regardless of what age I am?
It has tags on each of its videos. It's not that the videos don't have information describing what they are. It's
okay.
More that it can't. You can't go to YouTube and say, "Hey, give me all of your content and tell me which ones are illegal videos," because it can't search through all its content in one moment, right? The content is not designed for YouTube to be able to curate it. It can only respond to things as they're reported and as the algorithm just churns through videos that are uploaded.
And yeah, so one of the things to me that is the most, at least interesting aspects of a non-regulated informational infrastructure is that because there are no civilly created rules on what's permissible, the corporate entity then becomes the moral dictator, or the moderator, for example,
yeah.
Of what's permissible in forms of moral activity or as far as like social norms.
Yeah.
And so we now have corporate entities becoming the norm makers in society.
Are you talking about like Facebook's like community guidelines? That
yeah,
kind of
for
thing?
Example, that.
Mm-hmm.
Or what's permissible there, or what kind of content are they allowing? What content are they even showing you? Is a way for them to curate information in a way that's them prescribing a moral or normative description of what you can have.
Right.
But isn't that not so bad in certain cases? Like, I mean, you
so yeah, you're saying
in
certain cases, but like in
who
certain
gets
cases,
to decide,
it is.
Right?
So who decides?
I know, but that's hard.
But anyways,
to like,
yeah, go
but
finish.
For example, like you don't want. I mean, I wouldn't want my 10-year-old like on Pornhub, or some XX video. You know what I'm saying? So like. It would be nice if they shouldn't really upload that to.
But I mean, there's
to, you know
other
what I'm
options,
saying?
Like you know, like there's optional ways
there are
to screen
parental controls.
No, there
content.
Are parental controls, but that's. But I'm saying like, certain things, I guess you can't necessarily
but to,
protect
yeah,
against.
To me,
like,
it is just this is just the allowance of the corporate to decide what's ethical to me is really concerning. Because companies are not responsive to the people,
They're not.
But well, not when they have as much control as they have. Situations like Facebook, and honestly, like, there's also this extra danger with things like Facebook because you don't necessarily know that it's being curated or how it's being curated, and so you can't, as a participant in those systems, understand like how because Facebook doesn't even know what its guidelines are.
Right, that's very true.
Which is kind of sad.
What's the alternative, though? Like, the alternative is the government steps in and regulates our social media content.
Why not neither? Why can't we have neither?
Well, we do have neither. It's 4chan, it's Reddit. You just can't be a person on those.
You cannot.
Right?
I mean, those exist. I'd be for people in real life that was like...
I mean, like, they're meats and weebs, but, like, they're people. And they deserve respect to some extent.
But
those, those places are awful, but they are also beautiful. Like, they're this ultimate Wild West frontier of social... experimentation.
I agree, and if that's what it's for, then that's fine. But we don't go to Reddit for social media.
No, I would not. Don't do that.
Like that's a
I feel like
idea.
People put too much information on Reddit. You know what I'm saying? Like
And so that's kind of the thing is for social media. I honestly don't know if we want to have it. I don't know how we do it without companies controlling it.
Because that's hard.
Because
it's like you don't. There needs to be some type of, like, moral standard. Like, you know, you don't want wild things, like, being shown. Not just, I guess, like, in a sexual manner, but just, like, in a like, a bomb manner. Because, like, you'll notice, like, they'll always blur out faces or stuff whenever they would show, like, violent videos in the news of Al-Qaeda or anything like that. Because it's, like, we know that we probably shouldn't put this out there to torture people like that. You know what I mean?
So do I have to decide, like... Corporations decide what goes on the internet. The government decides what goes on the internet.
No.
Or, like, everything is
don't. There are, like, other alternatives.
What are the other options?
So there are more structural changes that we can make to the internet that would have, or just certain types of the aspects of the internet. So, like I mentioned earlier, we can create regulations that don't just say Facebook cannot have X and X pictures, or X and X video, X and X content. But there can be things that says certain types of data is not permissible. Or certain, or like, you may not, this data, it cannot happen here. So these are changes to the actual structure of the platform itself.
Which is what they've already done, because I know that, so before, you used to be able to, like, upload covers to Facebook of, like, you singing something, or, like, music playing in the background. But now, Facebook has an algorithm in which, if it sounds too similar to the song, they'll take it down because of copyright laws. So they have the ability to do it.
So self-regulation. It's that type of structural change.
Would it be, for Facebook, for instance, gating all your personal information behind an encryption so that Facebook can't monitor who you are?
That's interesting.
That's fine.
Yeah. Now, that functions only in the bare minimum for Facebook because it ruins their optimized...
They can't exist as the corporate machine that they are.
Yeah.
I feel like in the past few years, my ads on Facebook are getting very, very targeted. Like,
because how they make
it's
their
getting
money.
Like, I'm like, dude, they're don't. It's like, give me a day to forget. Like, don't come at me with the dress that I was looking at on Amazon.
Literally, like, 5 minutes ago.
No, it was too, it's too soon. Like, it's too soon.
So, so this brings me back to the basic framework of what I think a regulated internet then should look like. Mm-hmm. So, it has consumer protections, like your data is not being sold. It's not being scraped away. There's privacy issues. It's encrypted, like you said. Mm-hmm. There are different ways for your information not to necessarily be taken, whether you like it or not. And then it has this equitable, I guess one more before that, it's protected in the sense that the quality is real. And so if you think of Facebook spreading this sort of misinformation and simply just saying, because we are not going to curate, or because we've decided to create this open space, even despite some of the other issues with that, there's no way to ensure the truthness of what's there. And then there's also the access, the question we talked about earlier about equitable access. Who can even go there? And that's questions of monopoly power. That's pricing, as we talked earlier. And so to me, it's not that I have what the internet should look like. It's just that there's a framework by which we can actually think of the internet as a socially constructed social good that is a fluidly changing idea and that has it is adaptable because it is, and we should respond to it as such.
Well, and it seems like there also needs to be, like, yes, equitable access for people who want to use it, but also access for whoever's developing the next better Facebook mm-hmm. or whatever it might be that doesn't mm-hmm. have some of those issues and actually innovates in a way that's in the interest of the public good and making the internet better for a better experience for people.
Is there anything, any other regulations right now that are, like, immediately affecting us? Like, is there any, like, should I, like, be changing things on my computer when I get home? You know, is there...
Well, the answer is yes.
Fair. But I'm wondering, because, like, I've been, you know, I hear about net neutrality going around, and I understand, like, the complications of, like, what it is, and I don't know if I'm talking, like, all of the things that we're discussing, I'm like, yes, these are real issues, yeah. But I'm like... Are these real issues today, or is this real issues like 10 years
from now? These were real issues last year that people are now only becoming aware of because mm-hmm. of big data breaches.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where's your data going? Who has access to it? It's now becoming something that people are more aware of. But yeah, there absolutely are things that we should be doing. The problem is that...
Like, have they passed other deregulations?
No, that's what I'm saying. The problem right now is that we are, as consumers, responsible for the content that is even given to us. So the consumer, we are responsible for how we deal with what Facebook gives us.
Right.
Because the default settings or the settings that are built in are not in consumer favors. Like, they're not in our favor at all. And so the problem is that the onus of regulating is on the consumer. Which is another way we can regulate is the, you know, a mechanism of self-regulation. The people who have access to the internet do it differently, right? Internet in a different way. They go to 4chan, for example, which is not a good thing to do.
What is 4?
It's an anonymous message board. It's got B, which is the random board where all the evil comes from.
All of it.
I mean, well, to be honest, Reddit is a deeper pit. But there's nice stuff, like traditional gaming and
the cooking page is fine.
And cooking page. Good stuff, too.
I'm mad y'all are so deep in this world. That's really...
Like Tide Pod Pizza.
Yeah, that was 4chan.
And NyQuil Chicken.
So no other, like, deregulations have actually been passed besides that one.
Well, the problem with that, there's nothing else to... That was the only thing that was holding the internet away from an absolute free market. Which is interesting because we usually think of interference in a market as a market problem. You know, when government interferes with markets, it creates issues in the market.
Right.
The problem was that this free market had lots of problems, traditional market failures. The government decided what we need to do is level the playing field as best they could in a way that the government did that was in cooperation with there was a lot of issues with it, but it still created this more or less level playing field of saying that you cannot treat different consumers or different content providers in different ways.
And that is what is no longer...
And that is gone.
That is no longer gone. It doesn't, it doesn't mean that it will instantly default to, you know...
High load.
Yeah. No,
but
it'll be a long process.
It could trend that way.
Okay,
so
what we're talking about them charging me to use Facebook is not like a today problem.
No.
Okay, is this coming tomorrow?
No,
like,
is this
I gotta save up?
But I will say that there is another concerning aspect to this, which at the last Judiciary Committee hearing on the Parkland shooting, there was a representative from the Internet Coalition or Internet Company, some silly name. They basically represent a bunch of different internet firms, including Facebook and Google and those guys. And his whole thing was these companies are now working to make their services as conducive as possible to FBI, ATF, and Justice Department investigations of citizens to track down potential shooters. But what we're talking about is using these algorithms to build predictive modeling of dangerous behavior that's
dangerous.
Potentially really scary, considering how poorly mismanaged many of these companies wind up coming out the other end.
Yeah, because, like, it could be, like, Natalia's looking at bombs, but maybe you don't know, like, she's in an anti-terrorism class. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, still, that's weird. But like, I think that's what it can lead to. And it's also, like you were saying, with that other, like, encryption website thing, Tor.
Yeah.
It's like, if I'm a woman of color, if no one has noticed, and I go to a pretty liberal school and I have pretty liberal friends and I follow pretty liberal things, and so say in a current administration like ours who wants to like flag me because it's like, oh, she's trying to hide her data now, oh, What's she doing?
For instance, there's an activist where I went to college. She's actually currently being held by ICE. They targeted her on Facebook for her activism. Found her, arrested her. She is being held without bail. She is undocumented.
Okay.
But that is not the point. The point is they found a person who was speaking out, and they targeted them.
Which is really messed up.
Now, that sort of thing might not be happening, but it might be happening.
It's certainly feasible.
But clearly it's happening.
And, well, I mean, when I say happening, I mean like systematically happening.
Right. Okay.
And given that it's totally legal for it to happen with the Patriot Act and the various different Supreme Court decisions that govern how ICE and the police can treat non-documented citizens, that becomes a really scary apparatus, shall we say, for police totalitarian control.
The regulation, I guess the, you were talking about building that level playing field, which was an outcome of these regulations.
Which was net
that
neutrality.
Which was net neutrality, put in place in 2010-ish. When we think about regulations, it's always important to think about unintended consequences and, like, obviously think about how well the regulations actually worked in practice. So I'm wondering, were there any... Was there anything that you think could have been done differently in those regulatory frameworks to make the playing field even more level or avoid unintended consequences?
So I think the basic setup that net neutrality had was very solid.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think it really should have included issues for monopoly power as well as for innovation. But the problem with that is, like, because when you do create, like, what looks like a level playing field, you do automatically start getting large companies like Google, which pushes out all competition. The problem isn't now that without it, there can be even higher barriers to entry. Google, for example, can say, hey, Comcast, or Comcast can say, hey, Google, if you want to be on our server, on our network, pay us X amount of money.
Right.
Or Google can say, hey, Comcast, we'll give you X amount of money. Don't let the new hip search engine show up.
Ask Jeeves is coming back. Guys.
Don't let Ask Jeeves 2.0.
Previously, that wouldn't happen.
No, it could have happened. There could have been, like, backdoor ways. I mean, there's always ways to grease palms.
Sorry.
But without net neutrality, to me, that is one of the biggest fears, particularly when it comes to competition, innovation within the internet, which is inherently a space for innovation.
Yeah, I wanted to talk more too about the idea of the internet as, like, something that should inherently be accessible to everyone. That's an interesting concept to me. I think you could argue it both ways.
Wait, how could you? Can we just make a little more time? How could you argue that it shouldn't be?
Yeah,
because it is information. It's the fundamental building block of a free market. Is that information should be equal and accessible to all people in the free market.
Every time that you give someone a right to something, you kind of also give someone an obligation to provide that thing, right? So, an argument against it could just be that, like, it's not the kind of thing that should be considered, like, a human right, necessarily.
It's free access to information. The argument that you should restrict it to people because they might interfere with elections.
No, imagine if we tried to control the internet more. How much worse that would get.
But if you turn it conversely,
that's
you say that,
saying.
Well,
like,
maybe we should
so
only provide
worse.
Internet to those who are rich enough to have
willing
it.
Willing to pay.
Well, then the problem is, like, where do you apply for jobs right now? On the internet.
On the internet.
Where do you pay your bills? On the internet. Atlanta, their internet's been down because of a ransomware hack. People cannot pay their bills. Like,
they can't use the airport.
They can't use the airport. What if you have a court date? You can't file your court date. What if you have to refile your TANF forms? You can't
literally
do it.
To go
you will
for
get
jury
kicked
duty,
off. I mean, like, the problem is, like, when you have unequitable access to the internet, you have what ends up being a class distinction, which what ends
up
happening.
Couldn't you make
you have
the
financial
argument,
issues here.
That argument for, I don't know, a lot of different things that would be very difficult to pay for and distribute, and
like
who gets to decide?
Well, so the nice
I
thing
mean,
about the
I,
internet,
I'm not necessarily convinced that.
But let's
water
not make it any worse.
Be,
so
free, because I think a lot of, you know, water shortage problems and environmental issues are happening precisely because prices can't help us allocate water.
But at the same time, like, I need water.
But the
survive.
Internet is not the that's same kind of thing as water.
But
so that
it is.
Really
the internet is a necessary good. We cannot exist in the world that we did exist in. The
it's
same
not,
way.
It's nicer than water. because there's not a limited
It's not a finite kind of
thing. Basically, what
it's a public good by definition.
When people talk about
really.
Making right. it a true public good, what they're talking about is nationalizing the six or so ISPs that currently operate in the United States. And when people say there should be competition between ISPs, what they're saying is those six regional companies should be able to compete with one another. But a regional company in Nevada cannot compete with a regional company in the District of Columbia because they serve different markets that are stationary.
Right.
So it's not a system that needs competition. It's in fact a system that needs no competition because it's a public service like electricity, like telecommunications, like water.
Because we're not talking about it when it comes to like what, like no one's fighting over the fact that Connecticut gets different water than DC. You know what I'm saying? Or like,
well, you should move to California and then
But there's a finite allocation, though.
There is by definition a public good. It's non-excludable.
But I mean, the things that you need to access the internet are excludable. So practically,
that's a whole other issue, right? Like if you go to Senate hearings, a lot of the things they talk about are how rural communities are in every capacity left behind and abused.
Totally.
And a huge part of that is the fact that most rural areas in the United States don't have better than 1G service. Well, if they have any service at
which
all.
Is ridiculous.
Funny story about it, if y'all remember the Lifeline program that the FCC put out, which was later called Obama Phones.
Obama phones are awesome.
But part of the Obama phone program is also Wi-Fi access. Not Wi-Fi, 3G and internet access, as well as high speed cable access to homes out of the country. Mm-hmm. And so one of the big things that people fight at, you know, the fight against Obama phones is also a fight against rural internet.
Which is ridiculous because you would think you'd want those spaces to. That's such an listen, Verizon, Xfinity. If you out there listening on these streets, you're missing your untapped markets. Well, missing those untapped markets.
They don't have a way to get to those markets because it's so expensive to provide internet. They need the government to step in and provide the internet to those spaces. And there's bills that
build
are in Congress
the railroad
right now
lines.
About building the railroads. The difference being the railroad didn't actually impact economic development in the long run. It did in the short run, but in the long run, this fundamentally will. This will be the make
Absolutely.
Or break whether or not rural Americans get access to internet in the long run for either affordable cost or for free, depending on how you want to do it. That will either completely segregate our country on the basis of internet access, or it will be a unifying factor in that everyone can get access to free and available information.
Which is why I began earlier talking about the historic period of the progressive era of regulation, which all was about new and innovative technologies coming about that changed the way our economy worked. And it changed it in a way where goods and services became absolutely necessary, and without which they could, like the economy as it is cannot exist. We need to think of the internet the exact same way that we thought about telephones, or we thought about electricity, or cars.
Yeah.
The internet infrastructure is just is exact same type of infrastructure, and thinking about it any differently is harmful. So,
I mean, you make a very compelling
case. And on
if
that
anyone
note,
has different opinions, tell us about it in the comments, and maybe we'll chat about it after our next pod. So, all right. Nathan, this has been an awesome discussion.
It's been great to come back.
Yes,
thank you.
We're glad you're able to come back. So,
thank you for tuning in to GEW Wonkcast, brought to you by the Trachtenberg School of Public Policy and Public Administration. For more wonkiness, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our handle on all of those platforms is at GEW Wonkcast. And you can send us love letters or hate mail by emailing us at wonkcast@gmail.com. And be sure to rate us and subscribe. We're now on Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and iTunes. Today's show was produced by Maggie Gallagher and edited by...